I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Tony. I have the privilege of being the manager of the central office of Saramana in Sarasota, Florida. My sobriety date is January 15th, 1986. And I'll tell you, a lot happened leading up to that point. The letter that I got from AA World Services told me that I was to share my story with you and weave and meld something about my experience of central office and inner group into that story. And I am a product of a 12-step call. When that last drink occurred, I didn't know what else to do. I didn't want my life to be like it was. I didn't want to drink, but I didn't know how to stop. And some things happened, and I was directed to you people. But I'll tell you a little bit about myself first. You know, I think my last drunk started in 1972. I don't remember taking too many sober breaths from then until that last day. And as all of us, a whole bunch of stuff happened in my life, you know. None of it was very good, you know. It just was a series of bad things, you know, drunken escapades and just you name it. And I wound up in a place, like I said, where I knew I couldn't continue that way, but I didn't have any idea how to stop drinking. And I couldn't do it. I was on my way home one early morning. In fact, January 15th, I started drinking that day on the 14th and carried through the night and into the wee hours of the morning on the 15th. And I was driving home, and my car went into a ditch like it had a few other times. And I wanted to avoid the police. You know, it went into a ditch right across the street from a rectory of a church. And actually, I tell in my story at home, you know, I came out of a blackout, and there was an American Airlines jet going overhead. And I came out of that blackout, and I saw the AA on the tail. And I got sober, and I've been here ever since. But that's not really what happened. I came out of that blackout in a ditch, and I thought, the cops are going to get me for sure. And I had a priest who was a friend of mine who was at that rectory, and I didn't know what time it was. I thought it was 11 o'clock at night, so I went over, and I thought, I'm going to get sanctuary in the church. And that's the honest-to-God truth. That is exactly where my sick mind brought me. And I went over there, and I knocked on that door, and Father Phil opened it up, finally. And I don't know what I said to him or what we talked about that night, but he showed up at my house later that day, and he told me that if I thought I needed some help, to call this fellow named Ron Z. Now, his wife, this Ron Z's wife, and my wife were friends, so I already had his phone number, but I hated him. And he told me to call Ron Z, and he might know somebody that could help me. See, where I came from, I got sober in Cleveland, Ohio. And where I came from, the folks and the men and women in those groups there not only gave their name and their numbers to the central office, but they gave them to the local churches in places like that. So our PI committee also would talk to these folks and tell them how to protect our anonymity as well. So he didn't tell me to call Ronnie Z, and he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous or anything like that. He just said he might know somebody that could help you. I can't call him. I hate that SOB. But I didn't know what else to do. So I made that call. And Ronnie came over, and we talked for hours. And I didn't know, but it was a 12-step call. And he picked me up the next day and took me to my first AA meeting. I didn't know where we were going. I thought we were going to Pittsburgh. Again, I lived in Cleveland in that area. It was an 8 o'clock meeting. He's going to pick me up at 7. I thought, we can't get to Pittsburgh in an hour, you know. But that's, we went to the corner of the street to the very church that I went to the night before. There was an AA meeting there. And I thought, I can't go there. Those people know me, you know. But Ronnie got out and we went in, and you know, he kind of yanked me out of the car. But the thing about it is that Ron and his buddies were very, very active doing 12-step work. They were on the list at the central office. And after I was sober for a little while, they started taking me to the central office in where we answered the helpline. I didn't. They wouldn't let me. But, you know, when they first did it, you know, there was no big deal about it. They pulled in my driveway one day and said, hey, get in the car. We're going here. And so I got in the car. They took me to the central office, and there was, in Cleveland, there was a bunch of phones, and it was a pretty big office at the time. It was when they were on 3rd and Superior. And they let me look stuff up for them while they were answering the phone. And back in 1986 and that, there was a lot of 12-step calls. And they would get on the phone and they would call people and send them to go help this drunk. And it was just, I loved it. It was just exciting to me to be a part of that. After doing that for a while, I was brand new in the program when they started taking me down there. Then they took me there for other things, too. That's where I learned about the literature that we have. I learned about, you know, the different types of committees. I learned about speaking in places other than AA meetings, you know, the PI stuff. I learned that all through these guys and through the central office there. So anyway, they started taking me on these 12-step calls, and it was amazing. You know, I don't know that anybody got sober that I went to talk to, but I stayed sober. And it was really a cool thing, you know, and I just kind of fell in love with that. I found something that I could do in AA that I really enjoyed. You know, I could sit and talk to a drunk all day long. I love coming to things like this and just sharing my own experience with another person. It was really, it just fit me. And that's what these guys did, and that's what they showed me to do. Years later, I had some issues in my life. I think I was about 8 years sober, and I had an injury and stuff like that, and I lost most of my eyesight. I don't wear the glasses because I think I'm cool in a suit. I have a vision problem, and the lights bother my eyes and stuff like that, so it's not because I think I'm something. there's a need. But anyway, I had these difficulties, and I stopped doing some of those things. But I sponsored a lot of people at the time, and I still answered the phones. And one day, I got a phone call from the Cleveland Central Office, and it was to help this fella named Chris. And okay, I called another one of my friends, and we got in the car, and we went to talk and 12-step this guy named Chris. And we did that, and Chris started coming to meetings with us and things like that, but he had a real difficult time staying sober. Finally, he did after about a year and a half or so. He stayed sober, and he stayed sober for a few years. But when I started losing my eyesight and things like that, I loved to play golf, and I quit playing for many years. And this Chris kind of goaded me. You know, after this 12-step call and him getting sober, he kept needling me to go ahead and play golf again. I lived on this beautiful golf course in Ohio, and he kind of pushed me into playing golf again. And through that, through a 12-step call, this guy helped me to see that there were things in life that I could still do that I do love to do. And you know, things happened, and Chris and I became really close friends. And I moved to Florida back in 2004. And I was down there, and I was just playing golf 3 days a week or 4 days a week and enjoying myself. And at that time, the central office manager there passed away in 2006. And a few of my friends suggested I do that, or put in for the job. And before that, I started getting missing something. So I got involved with Intergroup. And at the time, the district chairperson was going to some of the same meetings that I went to. And he says, Tony, if you want to be an Intergroup rep, I'll drive you down there. I got to go anyway. So Joe B. started driving me to Intergroup meetings. And when the past manager passed away, Phil did, these folks suggested that I apply for the position. And I didn't want to. I really didn't want to, and I talked it over with my wife and some other people. And my daughter is still in Ohio, and she was pretty upset that I moved to Florida right after she got out of college. And when I told her what had happened and what these people were suggesting, she says, Dad, as much as I don't like you being in Florida, maybe that's why you're there. And maybe you should do that. So I put in for the position, and I got it. I don't know that I do a very good job of it, but I'm still there today from 2006. And over that time, a lot has happened. It has been, for me, the biggest privilege that I can have in Alcoholics Anonymous, to be the person that unlocks the door in the morning so that you folks could do 12-step work, That's what it's about for me. And every once in a while, I actually get to help somebody myself, And the thing is that, Chris, the guy that pushed me along and showed me that there are things that I could do even being visually impaired as I am, and Joe B. helping me accomplish that in what I am doing today. About a year ago, I got a phone call in the morning that Joe B. had passed away. Joe B. died sober. I think he got sober through a 12-step call. Chris, I got a phone call the same afternoon that Chris passed away. These two fellas helped me more in the last 8 years than probably anybody. Ronnie, my sponsor, was fantastic, and I loved him. He passed away several years ago. But I got the news that both of these fellas passed away on the same day. Joe died sober. Chris died of a wet brain. He drank himself to death. But I'm standing here today, and I have this beautiful position in my life. Well, not position, but opportunity in my life, because some drunk that I met on a 12-step call pushed me along. And I just cannot be grateful enough to Chris, to Joe, and there's a bunch of people in this room right now who came here to support me. Because they look, of their love and service for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know all of them have gone on 12-step calls that came through their central office. So it was pretty quick, but that's my story. Yeah.
Thanks, Tony. Good stuff. I forgot to tell you that my sobriety date is December the 12th, 1986. And on the day of my last drunk, I didn't know it was my last drunk. I had some people had taken me to a bunch of AA meetings, and I really enjoyed them, but I didn't think AA was going to work for me, so I went to meetings and I drank, and I went to meetings and I drank, and I did this for a couple of months. And then somewhere along the line, the drinking sort of stopped, and that caught me by surprise. So I looked back and figured, what the heck is going on? And decided I better fix this. So I went out drinking one more time, and if I'd have known it was going to be my last time, I'd have probably done it different. But a few of us at a class that I was taking went to a bar, and they all petered away, and there was only two of us left at about midnight, and the money was running out. But the buses weren't running anymore, and I'd smashed up my car. a couple of months earlier than that, when I started going to the AA meeting, so I had no way to get home. But I was going to AA, and I thought I had it all figured out here. Now, in Calgary, we have some really dedicated individuals who take the phone calls. We have an answering service that takes the calls when the office is closed and turns it immediately over to an alcoholic, to whoever's monitoring the phones. But after 11 o'clock, we have some really dedicated people that take the calls right directly from the answering service and deal with it. And it was definitely after midnight when I was making the phone call, but I figured, I'm in AA, I'll just phone them up and get right home. So I did that. I was very polite. I explained to them that the buses weren't running anymore, and the answer I got is, we're not a goddamn answering service. Click. I found out who it was later after I started getting into the program. I got involved with Intergroup almost immediately, and I was doing those night monitoring calls, and I'm pretty sure I know who it was that did that, because he was monitoring the phones on the midnight shift, and he was the kind of guy that would say that. Our next speaker scheduled is Elaine from Philadelphia, but Elaine couldn't make it, and I'm not sure exactly why. I'm sure we got a really wonderful substitute. Her name is Karen, and she'll tell us why.
Yes. Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Karen, definitely alcoholic. And thank you. This isn't one of my favorite things to do, but I am doing this for Elaine. We do, her and I have the same sobriety date, which is, today was our last drink. Hers was today, 13 years ago, and mine was today, 1987. And I remained here. So tomorrow, what a way to remember, you know, and I want to wish everybody a happy 4th of July. It's 4th of July. We are free. That's all I keep thinking. It's 4th of July, and we have our freedom, you know, freedom from alcohol, the bondage, you know, it's amazing. You look around this whole weekend, you know, tell me AA doesn't work, you know, and it's not growing. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's powerful. I will tell you why Elaine's not here. She was so excited to be coming this weekend, and we were down the shore this past week, you know, before this, and she was riding her bike past my house, and all she kept saying, we kept hugging, we're saying, I'll see you in Atlanta, I'll see you in Atlanta. That's all she said. I'm telling you, this is the vision for me. Maybe I'll share it with you. I'll see you in Atlanta. And that was Tuesday this past week. And later that night, I got a phone call, and as Elaine was riding her bike home from my house to where she was staying that weekend, she fell off her bike, and she called me from the hospital. She broke a bone underneath her knee. I believe it's a tibia. I'm not sure, but I said, Elaine, you know, I always think there's a way. There's a way. Just get your leg casted. I will push you. Our friends will push you all around this weekend. Ask the doctor if you can come. Well, it turns out she needed surgery. Pretty major surgery. So Elaine's not able to be here. And so she asked me if I would do it for her. She said, well, we have the same sober date. She said, I believe you know what I know. She says, you've been in Intergroup. I truly have been part of Intergroup since the very beginning. Truly. Now, I can tell you that I didn't even work the program, but I was doing Intergroup. Okay, go figure. But it's okay. Going down there kept me sober long enough to open the book, to start getting busy. Okay? That's the truth. I was one of those, keep me in service for a little while, let me get my feet planted, then I'll do whatever I need to do to stay here. So I came kind of in the back door. But it was all about Intergroup. So when Elaine asked me to speak on behalf of Intergroup, it truly is a direct lifeline to the alcoholic who's out there. Truly. And if you're here at this workshop and you know it's all about Intergroup, then you know what I'm talking about. You know exactly what Tony said. You know, we are out there. We're the firing line. You know, we get the job done. You know, and I too got sober through the Yellow Pages. You know, I'll never forget. I opened the Yellow Pages and there was Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how it started for me. You know, and I'll be forever grateful. You know, I just, I couldn't say enough about Intergroup. You know, and I just wrote a couple things down. Basically, well, the thing was, Elaine had written some things down about Intergroup office, you know, our central office in Philadelphia. And I didn't print that out. I wished I did, because she had a lot of really, really good statistics on that paper. But I will tell you, I didn't want to tell her story, but I do want to incorporate her in a little bit in this, because without her, like, she is the one that opens the door down there. She is the one that stepped in. She is the one that got the job. You know what I mean? And watching her, you know, I've known her from the beginning. You know, watching her, what she does down there, and how she's on fire for this program and service, you know. And, man, she had it all down, though. She had, like, the number of commitments that we do. She wrote down how Intergroup grew so big in Philadelphia that we had to break it down into zones, you know, which means, like, you know, for now, Delaware. At one time, when I started in Intergroup, we met it's called the FOP on Spring Garden. It's a big hall. It was always full of all five counties in that one place. And it was a free-for-all. If you wanted a commitment, truly, I guess you guys remember, if you wanted that prison or if you wanted that, at the time, you could even get prisons on the clipboards. If you remember, you'd go to the table and you'd get, you know, it was a free-for-all. And so we started having these little meetings on the side saying that maybe we could break it down into zones. So now Chester County has their own, Delaware County, you know, Bucks County, Montgomery County, and Philadelphia County. You know, we get a lot more business done this way, you know, because it's in smaller groups. We can pay attention. We know who's showing up. We know who's not. We know what commitments are gone missed and which ones aren't, you know, just to be accountable, you know, because I remember myself even, you know, when I've been on, I don't want to make it sound a certain way, but I've been on every committee that there is. I'm still kind of have my foot in each one. You know, I'm still there for somebody if somebody needs orientation for a prison to get a pass or something, or, you know, just things. PI, I still go into schools. You know, CPC, like, we know what all these are, but to see them in action and want to sit back here and maybe, you know, explain a little bit. I'm also on the Unity Committee. So the Unity Committee, for you that don't know that, is we get a bunch of people who represent each service, each branch of service, and we talk about it. You know, mine happens to be Interphone. Mine happens to be a new commitment that we started, which was Hush. You know, taking meetings to the shut-ins, the sick, and the people that can't get to meetings. We just started that. That's a new little thing. But, and I can go on and on, because when she did ask me, I thought, if I have to talk about service and not myself, I can do that. You know what I mean? I can tell you all about that stuff. I don't have to sit here and tell you about me, you know, except that when I came here, Intergroup was a lifeline for me. To think that my sober date is tomorrow, July 5th, okay? Another thing I wanted to say, that in this room today, my son sits here, a sober member of AA. That is God. Talk about a gift. They said, keep coming back, stay around, let the miracle happen. Not only did that miracle happen for me, but then to watch him come and grow is still. Anyway, it doesn't get any better than this. You know, if you're not sure what your purpose is, call your local intergroup office. They'll find something for you. You know, it could be prisons. It could be schools. I was on fire for the schools. You know, it just to go in there. You know, I wasn't sure if I was going to tell you this one story, but I'm going to because it just came to my mind. I was on doing PI at the time, and I said, I just showed up. Whatever you put me. And so they sent me to Philadelphia Community College. Okay, so now I'm representing AA at a community college. For you guys that know, people that know what college sometimes represents, it's definitely not being sober. Okay? So here I am. They give me a table, and they give me a giant AA. Big circle with a big giant AA, and I'm on a college campus. Okay? I sat at the table. I said, I'll do whatever you want me to do, you know? They stayed away from that table like it was, like, unbelievable. Like they actually walked around it like it would suck them in, you know? And I thought, oh, my God. And I think about some of the things that we just show up. Here I am, little old me, this big, giant AA behind me on the wall, because we do have the, you know, and it's just a big thing that says it. And I thought, and I watched each one, like, just totally go around me. And I thought, but you know what happened for me? It kept me sober. I showed up there. And somebody did eventually come up and talk to me. And this one was a boy, man, or guy, whatever you are in college, in between boy and man. And he sat down with all his peers, all that, just walking by, and he sat down. And he had tears in his eyes. And I have three sons. And I had three sons at that time, and I thought, wow. That was my calling that day. I showed up at that table. That boy sat down. I believe he's still sober today. Wasn't afraid to plant that seed and be a lifeline. You never know. You never know. God does the work, doesn't he? He puts us where he needs to be. But so anyway, I really appreciate the fact that Elaine did ask me and trust me. On her behalf, I hope that I at least did a little something for her, and her sober date is tomorrow. Like when I talked to her today, she said, today was our last drink. Today was our last drink. And I said, I remember the fireworks, and thank you, God, I made it through the night. And her, too. She said the same thing, so it's pretty cool. That's all. Thanks.
Happy birthday to both of you.
Thank you.
A day early. My home group is the Front Runners group in Calgary. And it was I've only had one group. It was the very first group I went to. And I, incidentally, have only had one sponsor as well. There's a few of us that can say that, but not an awful lot. Early on in my sobriety, I think I was about 3 months sober or something like that, and my group put on this little tiny roundup, but it lasted all weekend. It was a whole bunch of meetings and such, and at one of the meetings they had a panel there, and one of the a table, you know, similar to this, and there were a bunch of people sitting at the table, and I didn't know it was a panel. I didn't have any clue about any of that kind of stuff. I was still pretty much in a fog, I'll grant you. But one of the people at the table said that he was the chair of Intergroup, of Calgary Intergroup. And that made, he might have told me he was the Tsar of Russia. It would have made as much sense to me. But then he started talking about the things that Intergroup does, and he talked about the meeting list, and he talked about answering the phones, and he talked about central office and all the literature that we had there and all this stuff and on about. And it never entered my head that somebody has to do these things, you know. Somebody had to arrange for the phone call that I made 3 months earlier that I got hung up on. And it just never entered my head that all that happened, and I was absolutely fascinated. It was amazing to me. So 3 months later, I wasn't even doing my program or anything. I was just going to meetings. I wasn't very good. I was having great difficulty reading, but I was really good at going to meetings. So I went to a lot of meetings. I was not working the program, but I asked my sponsor how come our group doesn't have an intergroup rep, because he also talked about those intergroup representatives. And my sponsor said, I don't know, we just don't at the moment. And I said, can I be? And he says, well, you only got 6 months sobriety. And I said, yeah. He said, well, you can give it a try. So I did. And that was my entry into service work, because I dived into that. I still wasn't working my program, but I could do this other stuff. I couldn't. I had, my greatest difficulty was with step three. So I had gotten up to step three, and I was working on step three for 2 years. But in the meantime, I was doing service work, and I was involved in Intergroup. And I wasn't involved there very long, and they started giving me positions. My first position was literature chair. Wow, what an eye-opener that was, to see all the literature that is available at the General Service Office and that kind of thing. I became treasurer of Intergroup. I did all kinds of stuff. Eventually, I worked my steps. But I got out of Intergroup. I got out of Intergroup after a while and started working in general service. I became GSR for my group and DCM and all that kind of stuff, and moving down the ladder in general service. But later on, after I wasn't getting elected to anything in general service anymore and my positions were all up, I was still taking meetings out to the jails and stuff like that, but I didn't have a position in service at all anymore. And our office manager at central office had, I guess she quit. She and they were really hard up for another office manager. They just could not find anybody. And I just happened to be at the office one time, and somebody said to me, why don't you take the job? One of the people that was looking for somebody. And I says, you can't afford to pay me how much I need to live. I mean, central office didn't pay very much. The gals we'd had up until that time were married, and this was, you know, a second income for the family, and they didn't pay very much. And I said, you can't pay me what I need to live. And I was unemployed, and I was getting rather desperate. My unemployment had run out, and I was temping at a temp agency, and they weren't calling me anymore. And I was almost 60, I think. I was in my mid-50s anyway, and I was 54. Now that I think of it. Nobody wants to hire somebody who's 54 without an education and all that kind of stuff. And I was really getting quite worried. And she said, how much do you need? And I gave her a number that I thought was, I didn't know if I could make it on that number. And she says, I think we can. So I took the job. And a whole different world. That was 9 years ago, and a whole different world has opened up for me. It turned out, and they pay me a little more now. And a whole world has opened up for me. Watching the stuff that goes on there and being a part of it, I tell everybody I've got the best job in the world, and I'm not ever going to quit. I'm going to get carried out of there on a Guernsey, or gurney. They might carry me out on a cow. when I kick the bucket, just throw me over a cow. Anyway, our next speaker, I talked about the seminars that we have every year, and I chaired one of the sessions at one of the seminars, and my recorder was our next speaker. Her name is Shireen, and she's from Washington. She's from Washington.
Good afternoon. My name is Shireen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Shireen.
And I'm from Spokane. Well, I live in Valley Forge, Washington, a little bitty place outside Spokane, Washington, where the central office is located. My sobriety date is 3699. I like that. And my home group is First Things First in Spokane. I get really enthusiastic about the central office. There are a number of things that it does that are kind of obvious. You know, the 12-step calls, the phone, you know, the hotline, that's pretty central and obvious, and people associate the central office with that hotline. Got that, okay? We sell literature. We do the schedules. We fold 15,000 schedules a year out of our little office, and we're just little folks. But there are some other things that the central office does that I wanted to share a little bit about that I find really exciting once you get into it, you know. I volunteered there for 3 years before I took the job as office manager. And so my enthusiasm started when I was a volunteer, because I got to see the way things came together. So let me start with that. The first thing, of course, is the recovery, and that's the phone line. We also have a website, and so people looking for Alcoholics Anonymous, like somebody said, you know, the yellow pages, there's one phone call. There are 4 districts in Spokane, and we cover a large part of northeastern Washington, not all the way to Canada, but a large part from about 50 miles across and pretty long. And so there's 4 districts, and people don't need to figure out what district they're going to call when they're looking for help. They call the number they find on the internet or in the phone book, and that's a central office number. So then we have, you know, the 12-step call people that they hook up with. We get meetings for people for the first time, but we also give people information like students and relatives and friends of alcoholics. They can go to open meetings, or we clue them into Al-Anon. We also get calls from agencies, like treatment agencies, and we got one from the Area Agency on Aging. They needed stuff on AA in their office. That was a resource that they needed. So that recovery part is pretty obvious, and then the service part is the other part that's really obvious, and that is volunteers get to volunteer there. They need a service position. Maybe they already did the coffee position for a while, you know. They've chaired some meetings, maybe. But staffing the central office is another service position. You get to answer the phone and talk to people and talk about AA, which saved your life. And that's, you know, people like to talk about AA. Get to help people with their purchases. And one of the cool things is being able to share with them what will enhance a sobriety that's already on its path. We get the newcomers, yes, but we get people who've been around for a while, and maybe now they're on their 11th step, and you know how Bill says in the big book that there are a lot of helpful books out there, and you can get a list from your local priest, minister, rabbi, or central office. And, you know, we get to help people have a happy, sober life. I mean, on our particular circumstance, and it isn't for all central offices, we also sell merchandise that has not gone through the approval process of the General Service Conference. Coins, for one. But we have, you know, things like book covers and caps that say, "Thou shalt not snivel," and a little bit of jewelry and some, you know, stickers, higher powered, you can put on your refrigerator and that sort of thing. And what that is that's helping people decorate their lives with Alcoholics Anonymous to make it happy. I mean, it's like putting on a bracelet and with your whole life to be able to have something that you have just gives you that little bit of joy in your own life to be happy, to have a little color. So that's another part that, you know, is pretty obvious. But there's more than that. There's the PI, there's the archives, the website guy, and the board of directors. These are all volunteer positions. These are people who have a job. They have a family, and they're willing to put in this effort in amongst all the rest of that. And that's pretty cool. Now, as an office manager, I work part-time, but that's my everyday activity. I have to remember that I'm working with people who have an everyday activity, and it's not this. They are at a nine-to-fiver kind of thing, an accountant or a real estate agent or whatever. And so I really appreciate that. We also have one gal who came in and said, gosh, your carpet looks like crap. And she came in and cleaned it, and it looked like a brand-new carpet. You know, somebody else came in and taped the windows for winter. It's just awesome. Somebody else said, gosh, your door doesn't shut very well, and they fixed it. So, you know, this is service, and service keeps us sober. So there's the outreach to people outside of Alcoholics Anonymous that are maybe looking for information in. Then there's the inside going out. And all of that is bound up in recovery, all of it. But this is where I get excited, okay? Unity. Our little organization over there recently reorganized, okay? We had, for 30 years, we had so that all the GSRs were on the board. Now, that could have been 120. No, it was more like 30 or 40. But it got unwieldy, and personalities came in, and it got, you know, not so nice. And so we got a little ad hoc committee together, and they did some research, and we reorganized. Now we have a board of seven, right? One board member from each of the four districts, and then the corporate officers, because we're an incorporated nonprofit. We walk with one foot in the corporate world and one foot in the AA world. And so the districts kind of went, well, fine, we're going to take our ball and go home. And they did that because we no longer had this need for everybody to get together. But the central office still goes on. All four districts support that central office. What do you know? The schedules, the website, the hotline, this brings people together practically against their will. It's because as alcoholics, we need each other to survive, yes. And in this kind of, you know, in that level of our life, where we have a hotline and we have schedules, we need each other to survive. We're not going to have four separate schedules floating around out there. We're not going to have four hotlines. No, they come together. We come together. And I just get goosebumps about it because, a central office has happened before districts. They happened before the General Service Conference. Right early on, they had to have some place to answer the mail from. And what was it, Ruth Hawk, I think? But I could be wrong. So central office is something that's been around for a long time. And when I work with central office, I feel this sense of history, the sense of being part of a tribe that's been going on for a long time. We should have a coat of arms. Oh, we do have a coat of arms. It's a circle triangle. And I feel that sense of history and the way that all the groups in all four districts send contributions to central office. Now, the thing about that is that it's spiritual. On the one hand, we have the corporate side, where we have to pay the taxes, we have to fill out the forms for the government, we have to keep the right kind of records, we have to do that. On the other hand, though, when somebody puts their $2 in the basket, it's a spiritual activity. Sometimes it's kind of grudging, sometimes it's a little fearful, but in reality, it's keeping Alcoholics Anonymous together, and it's keeping it for the future. So it's not just for us. It's for those coming after us, our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and probably more. But anyway, it's a spiritual activity, and so that central office is supported by a spiritual activity. When the people do the service work that they do there, whether it's answering the phone or collecting archives. Oh, our archivist, you would not believe it. He makes these great big charts when he's researched all the different groups and he has little lines drawn for how long they've been around, and he gets excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. And it brightens his life. It enlivens his life. You know, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I remember going through the phase where I was bored. I thought it was stupid, and I didn't know how I was ever going to have any fun again. And the old-timer said that was serenity I didn't know what to do with. I just had to survive it until it passed, and I got excited about something else. And I know my first exposure to that kind of, that level of service, not the GSR district, GSO line of service, but the committee line of service over there, my sponsor was on a board there, and she went to a board meeting, and then she went out. And I thought, well, geez, I'm never doing that. I stayed away from that for like 10 years, you know, because it just seemed dangerous. But then I got, I moved up from Phoenix. My first 10 years of sobriety was in Phoenix, and I moved up to Spokane. And I was kind of nervous and scared, and I was sure. On the one hand, I was excited because I was going with God and I was having a new adventure with God. I forgot I was going to have the real emotional human reaction of grief of leaving my home. And I was just sure that I was going to drink. I just was terrified I was going to drink. And called my sponsor in the middle of the night for walking all around the neighborhood talking to her. But another thing that happened was that I started volunteering at the central office. I was a little shy then, and I didn't do well with large crowds. When I first got up there, I couldn't even really go into the potluck because it was too many people. And now look at me. That's what AA will do for you. But I started volunteering at the central office, and I just fell in love with it. One person would come in. I could talk to one person. And they'd sit down. They'd have a cup of coffee and some cookies, and they'd tell me their story. They'd talk about what they were doing today and what was going wrong today. And we'd start talking about the big book and the solution. And I'd get out of there just dancing on air. I loved it. And then I took the Wednesday night shift, which was real quiet, maybe one phone call, maybe one visitor, and it was a time of quiet and meditation because I was sitting there ready and willing for whatever God had for me to do. And it was a 2.5-3 hour shift of being ready and willing to do whatever God had for me to do and hold that pose. So now our volunteers come in there, and I did too, 4 hours, ready and willing. And sometimes it's quiet and nothing really happens. But your heart is there on a hum note. Like, and you're ready. And it's awesome. And if they get bored, they can always read the literature. It's free. So my favorite part of the central office is the unity. I can't say enough about how it pulls people together. Now, one of the main things that I deal with as a central office manager is the communication. We have districts now that are having a barbecue over here and a workshop over there, and how are they going to tell each other? Well, they send it to the central office. Now, they don't really like the central office because they had a bad experience with the intergroup there for a while, but gosh, it's useful. And we put it on the website, and we have what we call Friday reminders, where every Friday I send out an email to anybody who's voluntarily on the email list that says, what's going on this weekend, next week, and next weekend? So in case you need to plan to be out of town on some function. We get out information on the quarterlies and the assemblies, on standing committee workshops, regional forums, as well as potlucks, picnics, memorials. You know, one of us has passed, memorial, and it's all together. There's no differentiation. The email does not know what district you're in. It just goes, and it brings people together. We live right across the border from Coeur d'Alene, and I love to get stuff from Coeur d'Alene to get on our website, on our bulletin boards, to make copies. I mean, it's 30 miles. We got people. I go to meetings in Coeur d'Alene regularly, and so when I think about the central office, I get jazzed. And if there's anything I can send home with you today, it would be to get jazzed, to think about not just the technicalities of the phone line and the service, but the unity and the way it brings us all together, how it's such an opportunity to live this kind of togetherness in your hometown. Even if you don't have an intergroup, if you have a central office of any sort, some of them are so small, they have a volunteer office manager. I've seen ones where they pass a cell phone around to answer 12-step calls. Others are huge. They have three paid full-time managers or, you know, employees. So it goes the gamut, but it pulls everybody together in a way that isn't just practical, it's spiritual. That readiness, that willingness, that putting personality stuff aside and working together. I don't have to like everybody in AA, but I work with anybody in AA. And I learned that in a central office. It hasn't always been a bed of roses. That's some real spiritual challenges in there, opportunities for growth. And my sponsor heard about it. And I wouldn't trade it for the world, and that's the honest-to-God truth. I would not trade it for the world. If I had to go through that pain again, I would do it for the growth and the value that it has been to me. And I want to close with one little story, and that is, the other day, the volunteer was busy, and so I took the phone call. By golly, it was a 12-step call. And I'm not paid to do 12-step work. That's real clear. Although Bill does say in language of the heart, so what if they do a little 12-step work along the way? Nonetheless, they take it seriously, and I clocked off. And I took the 12-step call. And the woman was in tears. She'd been sober for a year or so, but not gone to meetings because she heard it was a religious cult thing. But she was so desperate to stay sober. And no, I'm trained to say, well, I've got this list of volunteers here. Let me get you somebody on the phone, and they will come and meet with you. And that's not how my higher power led me. My higher power led me to say, really, there's a meeting here in 20 minutes. I'll meet you out front. And by golly, she showed up. And we went into the meeting, and of course she heard about the big book, and you can imagine what she thought. And she heard a lot about God. And she sat there. She was desperate to stay sober. She was willing to go past her fear and her bias and sit there and trust. There was another woman with a handout from AA who said, come on, I'll meet you there. And I took her in. I sat next to her, and I didn't explain everything during the meeting. I just let God do it. After the meeting, I said, let's go over to the central office. You have a big book. And she said, I don't have a Bible, you know. So we got her a big book and, talked to her. And the volunteer that was on duty at the time, another woman, talked to her also. We gave her our numbers. And the next day she called. And she met up with the volunteer that had been on staff the day before, and they went to a meeting. And then she came upstairs and she talked to me for half an hour. And I called her back about a week later, and she was so on fire. She had found a home group. She had found a sponsor that she had a similar background with, including the little drugs that mine doesn't. I'm one of those old-fashioned alcohol-only type of people. And she was on fire. And it was so cool that I got that. I mean, the volunteer happened to be busy. Is that odd or is that God? And so I clocked off and I took the 12-step call, and it was so awesome. If you have an opportunity to work in your central office, there's dusting, there's vacuuming. If you got plants, they could be watered. You know, there are things to sort, I can guarantee you. Give it a try. Give it a try. And while you're at it, think about the unity. Think how it brings your community together and what a great gift it is, and an old one. Very old institution in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for the opportunity to share my enthusiasm.
That's what makes it all worthwhile. When you get somebody to phones up and asks to make a reservation for one of our sessions, and you... later on you find that one of these people that has called in tears and absolutely desperate has made it to a meeting, has found the program, has got a big book, and is on their way to sobriety. It doesn't happen an awful lot in there's over a million people in Calgary, and it doesn't happen very often that we get this connection, but every once in a while it does, and that's what makes it all worthwhile, just like you said. Thanks. So one more hand for our speakers, if you would.